Welcome to the Booktopia podcast. I'm Sarah McDooley. I'm here with Ben Hunter.
Hello.
And both of us are very excited to be sitting across from Andy Griffiths and Terry Denton.
Welcome.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Wait.
We'll get into an infinite loop for Terry. Watch out.
How are you, Andy?
I'm very good. Yeah.
Oh,
really good. How are you?
I'm all right. I'm fine.
We're all good. And we're here to talk about your brand new book, The 104-Story Treehouse. Can you tell us a little bit about what your alter ego characters are going to be up to in this new book?
Well, basically, Andy, the narrator, has toothache, and he's not feeling funny enough to write the new book, which is going to be based around riddles and jokes. And Terry notices an ad for a joke writing pencil, a joke writer 2000. And if we can get hold of one of those, it's funny enough to write the book for us. The problem is our $2 shop in the treehouse is out of them, and there's only one left in the $2 million shop. And we don't have $2 million. And that's where all the problems begin.
And we have a money-making machine.
Yeah, well, we do have a money-making machine, but some idiot, while we're making all the money, switches the machine to honey.
So you make honey?
It makes honey as well.
2 million honey?
Yeah, a lot of gallons of honey.
Flood
the treehouse.
An explosion of honey.
And attract a lot of bears. And then we have to deal with the bears.
It goes downhill.
Before we can get the joke writer, before I can fix my teeth.
I was just flipping through the bear section when we were outside.
The bear section.
Part two, bears.
Fun fighting bear section of the book, and it is very funny. Very, very funny. I wanted to ask, well, first of all, you guys are so popular and so busy. We actually only have 15 minutes with you today, and so I'm going to be watching the timer, and when we get close to 15 minutes, I want one of you to signal me. Will that be okay?
Fine. I can do that, yes.
Awesome.
Do you want to practice?
Or wait for them? I think it should be an amazing surprise when it happens. But we'll in the meantime, talk about your process. And when I think of you guys writing and drawing, I imagine you both in the treehouse laughing hysterically and getting up to all sorts of fun and games. Is that kind of how it goes?
It's
pretty accurate.
I don't think it's far off. in real life, we lived for a number of years in a three-story townhouse, and Terry would come over, and we work with my wife Jill, who is an editor, kind of an umpire of the whole thing. And yeah, it's exactly like you described. We'd be drawing and laughing,
bouncing ideas off each other, just pushing each other a little bit in. Directions we were probably not comfortable going, it was good.
Yeah, and we go too far in wonder in the stupidity direction. And you can see Jill getting more and more agitated. We're wasting time. But she's a crucial part of the thing. She stops us from being too abstract and brings us back into the middle. So that
and Andy will chuck an idea at me, you know, saying, well, we want a truncanator, some elephant.
I need a boxing elephant.
Love, how, you know, what would that look like? So, you know, I sort of sketch out what it might look like, and he might say, oh, maybe a little bit more this way. Together we just sort of work these things.
And once I have that picture of the boxing elephant, I know I've got a clear idea of what it can do and how it's going to be integrated into the story. So that spurs me on to
want
to honour Terry's picture, you know, because he does these great pictures. So you've got to lift your game to make sure they're presented beautifully.
And was there ever a time that Jill kiboshed something and was like, no, I'm sorry, that's too far?
You've gone too far.
Yes, Barky the Barking Dog in the first book, where Terry is wasting time. Instead of writing the book, he's watching Barky the Barking Dog television show. And that is just a show showing a dog barking repetitively. And in the book, I think he barks for about 4 or 5 pages, little frames. And I said, beginning, let's do 30 pages. Just like, we'll just stop the book and just have a dog barking. Because kids get it. They realise that you are breaking every storytelling rule. And that's what they're thrilling to. Whereas adults are a bit head scratching going,
why
is there a dog bark?
It's in my ink.
Ridiculous.
I love it. Because then the kid can go to mum and dad and say, look, I just finished 30 pages. In
10 minutes.
Or when they're reading it with the parents, the parents forced to go bark, 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 bark.
Yeah.
Which that's the kid enjoys the parents' torment.
Imagine the audiobook.
Yeah, right.
But I think standards are slipping because in the latest book we are climbing the never-ending staircase and I think we have 27 pages of the word up and up and up and up and up and Terry's just drawing.
The staircase just goes on and on and on.
So it's extremely repetitive, so yeah.
Well, when you call it the never-ending staircase, yep. You've got to, well,
you've got to give that impression. Yes.
And I actually really enjoyed drawing all those stairs.
I thought you might.
I mean, when, talking about reining in how incredibly wacky all this stuff is the tree okay?
Yeah.
Is there stuff on this tree?
It's a very good question.
Do you get this a lot?
Well, the tree's fine. If you know, if you look on the front of the 26-story treehouse, you can clearly see the poles that are holding up.
Oh, okay. You got the poles?
Some of the branches, the Dali-like sticks. But I do, we have had a lot of requests to go underground, and I'm kind of quite keen to explore the root system of the tree and see if there's any problems down there that we might be able to go and
work our way all the way down to the Earth's core.
I want to go to the centre of the Earth, yes.
Very Jules Verne.
I want to see and read that.
Because we take cues from a lot of famous books like H.G. Wells in the 65-story treehouse. We end up going in our time machine 650 million years in the future, where we encounter H.G. Wells doing some research for his book, The Time Machine. In fact, we gave him the title. He didn't even know the title of his book.
Oh, well done.
Thanks, guys.
And and in return, he fixed our time machine and we got back.
So these books are so beloved. I imagine it's like really special for you meeting the fans, and I wondered if you have any particular like fun stories of cute, amazing things that have happened. Not to put you on the spot, like just tell us a really great anecdote, please.
Oh, you mean like the 700 kids at Rudy Hill last night who were yelling the word diarrhea at us and forcing Terry to draw diarrhea? Oh, we love those children. We do.
I kind of want to see the drawing. Is that weird?
Yeah. What comes across is just, you know, the love of the books. But often the parents, you know, just really happy their kids are reading too. That's sort of one of the biggest payoffs, isn't it? Apart from all the laughs along the way. And we were hitting marshmallows at them last night, so they were loving that. A bit of mayhem. A few people lost eyes and ears.
But, to marshmallows.
Oh, actually, the scramble for marshmallows.
But they're so sweet, and they all wait around at the end, and we have photographs and meet them all individually. And these kids are really living and loving the books, and I can recognise the same fervour that I had from the books I loved as a kid. And I guess that's one of the reasons why I started writing, was to make sure that kids of today have those books that are for pure pleasure and for the pleasure of reading, to help them to read better, to help them fall in love with books and set them up, you know, for the rest of their life with both literacy and another realm that you can go to at any point.
And numeracy with the 13 stories.
Yes, yeah.
13 times tables.
You must be getting so good at them.
Spelling the two different versions of story.
Yeah,
so that's right. Generation of children how to do that.
That's right.
On that, engaging children and helping them to fall in love with books, you've been doing this for a whole very successful career now. Is there something that parents and educators might be listening to this? Is there something that you can offer them? Is there something that we're sort of letting kids down in, or is there more we need to do?
Well, my feeling is what we're doing is giving them books that they love, books that are loved, and that books where there's no barriers to them sort of leaping in and reading and enjoying. And I think that, from our point of view, is the great challenge. And I think they're actually getting that these days. You know, the number of really good kids' books that will get them started reading, Wimpy Kid, and stuff like that. And I think children's literature is doing really well at the moment. Some great stuff.
Yeah, and I think as adults, you have to realise that kids enjoy incongruity. They enjoy nonsense. It may not be your thing, but to give them, cut them some slack, and let them choose the books that are giving them pleasure, and trust that that will lead them in as a gateway into, you know, deeper and longer books.
And it'll be different for every kid. You know, some kids just won't spend time with the Treehouse books. It's not their thing. But
a car magazine might be the thing that unlocks a child's love of words and turning pages.
The daily betting sheet from the newspaper or something.
Yeah.
So many kids are into that.
Horse racing.
For me, for me, it was horror comics alongside Enid Blyton. I loved early American horror comics, and, you know, mad scientists and crazy robots and, you know, cities being destroyed. And you'll see a lot of that in the books because I'm bringing up a lot of the stuff I loved. And Terry,
for me, it was cartoons, TV cartoons, and comics, comic strips, and I was a child prodigy as a painter as well. Did murals for the Vatican and all sorts of things.
Of course.
And what happened? How did you end up here?
Well, I fell off the ceiling and.
I'm sorry. I find it very funny. The two of you have an amazing sort of partnership and you bounce off each other so well. Is that just a magical thing? Like, is it something that just works?
No, we work really hard at it. We have many counselling sessions.
The thing is same time we're an adult and we're a child. When we're working, you know, with a 9-year-old and we're a 45-year-old who's trying to work out how it all works. So it's that combination of just play and discipline.
Is it hard to tap into that? Because I think a lot of people struggle.
No, that's the thing. I think for probably most of the children's authors, you're in there already. You know, you're in there very quickly. And for me, I can't do a John Marston thing where you're dealing with adults, young adults' problems. It's not my area. I'm exactly where I need to be or should be. And so is Andy.
Yeah, and I think when we met each other and started working artistically, we recognised that in each other and realised that.
Yeah, and in fact, you know, when we met each other, I think we were both craving that.
That's the signal.
Carrie.
We're out of time.
Carrie.
That was one heck of a signal.
Amazing.
It's all going so well.
Thank you so much for that.
Pleasure, madam. Pleasure, sir.
Terry, Andy, thank you so, so much for coming in and speaking to us today.
Thank you, Sarah and Ben.
And you can, podcast listeners, get all of the Treehouse books, including the brand new 104-story Treehouse, at Booktopia.
Right now.
Hey.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.